Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Hosts Gene and Tim, along with team members
Teresa, Linda, and Annie,
are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Green Counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kenalty.
And I'm Gene Thomas.
And welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Gene, we're on our road trip in Ithaca. How exciting. We have to make sure you behave on this trip.
Yeah, we'll see. Today, our guest is Ashley Helmholt. Ashley has joined us to talk about some of the areas she's most passionate about.
Welcome, Ashley. Let's start with a little bit about you. Personally, we always like to hear about people, their backgrounds, and how they ended up at Cornell or wherever they are. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I have been involved with environmental education for over 20 years, I would say. I really started back when I was at Michigan State University, and I first got involved with the school garden there and got very involved with service learning and environmental education with K through 12. So that's how I got started, and I worked for a national nonprofit called Earthforce and did environmental education and water quality monitoring. But I got very involved with rain gardens and projects like that with students and really saw the value of volunteering and engaging in service learning as a way to collectively work together towards solving big, you know, hairy problems. So that was my first real job outside of also doing an AmeriCorps position where I worked on getting kids outdoors and access to nature. So I went to school. My master's was actually here at Cornell in human environment relations. Essentially, it was applied research around environmental psychology, and I studied children's gardens. So I did a behavior study of kids across all these different children's gardens to see how they behaved in different gardens with different features and plants. So that was a passion of mine, getting kids outdoors, and that's how I got started. But then following that national nonprofit position, I went to become a farmer's market manager for a few years and got very into vegetable gardening as a result and volunteered quite a bit, like you all, with vegetable gardens and school gardens, and then went to work for 4 years at the City of Savannah Sustainability Office. So I got very involved in, again, community and urban gardens in that context. So I've been very much involved in more of the planning and environmental education side of a lot of this. And I still feel like, I mean, as I meet all these master gardeners around the state, I feel like a beginner every day, which is so great because I feel like I'm surrounded by experts and everywhere I am. At Cornell, when I go out and talk to master gardeners, it's been exciting to learn from everybody. Yeah, and I'm just very passionate about environmental justice issues and specifically ecosystem services and environmental psychology. So very interested in the benefits of nature for healing, especially as we come out of COVID. I'm just so passionate about that as something that I think we have a real responsibility.
So that is amazing. I'd love to hear people's backgrounds, and it seems so, it's kind of such a natural fit then that you ended up here. Yeah. That is really terrific. And it's good that you've worked with children because, you know, Gene and I are like children.
Are.
So, you know, it should work out very well.
Excellent. All right, let's talk specifically about what's coming up for the Master Gardener programs in New York State. Just before COVID hit, several of us, Tim and Teresa and I and others, went to an international Master Gardener convention in Pennsylvania, and we got to meet the man who invented the whole thing. So could you fill our listeners in on the history of the Master Gardener program and tell us where we're headed in a world that needs us more?
Sure. Well, we just celebrated statewide the 50th anniversary for the Master Gardener program, which started out in Washington State, but then quickly spread to the rest of the country. And I guess it really started out, you know, as a way to support some of these folks that are more at the university level, realizing we have so many questions from the public and we can't answer them all. We need to train really a group of people to be able to help us support that questions and answers from the public. But then I think it's really evolved. And I've gone to a national Master Gardener coordinator meeting. I've you know, really talked to a lot of other coordinators around the country. Hotline questions continue to be core to what we do, but we're really involved in community engagement, again, and community service that tries to reach beyond just home gardeners, really to community gardeners and school gardeners. And I think that's why I really got into this position, because that's how I got started. And I think as a program, I know you all have been so involved for a long time as well. I think there's a lot of momentum around, again, engaging people on this health and wellness perspective of gardening. So our two pillars for our program statewide in New York State are food security and environmental stewardship. And I couldn't think of two more important things for us to be working on and inspiring also the next generation. So what's nice about working at Cornell Garden-Based Learning is that we have a lot of youth curriculum as well as adult curriculums. We're unusual in that respect. And we have this amazing curriculum resource from my predecessor, Marcia Mshili, that was just focused on youth. And I think that's kind of what makes us special here in New York State. We're very tied into the 4-H program, and we're really interested in kind of gardening throughout the lifespan and the health and wellness aspect of gardening, specifically with things like Seed to Supper, which is our beginning vegetable gardening program for low-budget gardeners. So COVID hit, right? And everybody was gardening. All these new gardeners, all my friends were reaching out to me asking for help. I'm like, please go to the Master Gardeners. There is just this need for people to be mentored that's been missing, I think, from a lot of people's lives. And so Seed to Supper is one way. Especially during COVID, we saw this huge boost in that program, and it's growing still. A way for us to reach people who have never done this before and I guess kind of like me in the past have wanted to do it but didn't know where to start. And so it's just kind of been a nice pathway for a lot of new people to really make it accessible. So that's been really exciting, I think, and after COVID specifically. But other things that have been really exciting is being able to communicate more online through our Moodle courses with Master Gardeners statewide. As people have become more comfortable with that, we've done a lot of online webinars and an advanced Moodle course all about ecological gardening skills. I think we're reaching people more now than more than ever because we had this moment where we were able to kind of like say, okay, you're all at home. Well, let's talk about what we have to offer and share it in some new platforms. And that's taken off as well. So those are some of the areas, and I think that have really been exciting after COVID and seeing that energy from people wanting to garden for the first time. And the other piece of it too is we are really excited about getting people hands-on learning too and doing more regional workshops. So we have this amazing ecological gardening guide for New York State and the Northeast coming out soon, along with a whole poster series for each of the seasons and a social media campaign that's going to be really, again, targeting this idea of how are we more adaptive and responsive to climate change and food security in our gardens. So that's really exciting. It's coming up soon. Look out for some really great opportunities around that and some funding to hopefully get that out into the local counties more.
A lot of great things. Can you talk a little bit about Seed to Supper? Because, we're in Columbia and Greene counties, but we're also representing the Hudson Valley. Is that happening in that region? And
yes.
How does someone get involved in that, and what is it?
Awesome. Yeah, so we have a couple of programs that are active in the Hudson Valley and some people that are hoping to start a new program. We have Putnam County has been very active from the beginning of the program, and they have a pretty robust Seed to Supper program. We have a couple other counties that want to start it this year, like Dutchess County, and others that are interested a little further, again, more into the Capital Region. We have Warren County in Schenectady has been doing it for a few years. So there's definitely a presence in the Hudson Valley, but we want more. And the way to get involved is to contact me. I'll do an orientation.
You know the person.
Yeah. Okay. The link will be there.
The link. Yes. So if you can reach out to me, we work with Cooperative Extension Offices. This is a program of Oregon Food Bank that we've adapted to New York State. So we work with Cooperative Extension Offices to train the volunteers with us regionally. So we'd love to do a regional training in the Hudson Valley and get you all involved. So that's definitely, reach out now. It's a good time to reach out. We're just getting started with our Seed to Supper year, and that a lot of those trainings that we have for the program are in the early winter.
And what is it exactly? When you say Seed to Supper, I love the concept, but tell us what exactly, how's it work?
Yeah, so it follows a really great format for beginning gardeners that it's essentially a 6-course series, but it can be fewer classes, teaching the beginning vegetable gardening basics. Everything from getting to know your soil and planning your garden to tending to your garden and managing pests. And finally, the supper part, which is fun. We bring in SNAP educators from local county offices and other folks that focus more on nutrition to do like a cooking class or maybe a preservation class with a master preserver. So that's kind of how the course really, what it entails. But what's really great is this year we did listening sessions around the state with participants, and we heard what they needed still and how can we improve it. So this year we have a grant to create hands-on activity kits for these educators and volunteers to take that, what we learned, into practice. And so that's all free to everybody who wants to join Seed to Supper this year. So really exciting time to join. And actually, we're doing a conference in 2025 and one downstate in 2024, like a one-day symposium on Seed to Supper and food security and resilient gardens post-COVID that all master gardeners around the state are invited to. So that's part of that program and the bigger focus on gardening for food security.
Cornell puts out a vegetable varieties list every year, and Teresa is particularly up to date on that. She's our veggie expert with all the podcast and the write-ups and things like that. Are you tying that in very carefully to the whole thing? So when they start out, that's one of the tools they get?
Yes. So we're being really intentional about linking these two programs together. And we had an amazing graduate student, Steven Strezzo, who helped us put together a seed catalog last year, basically documenting the last 10 years of the Vegetable Varieties for Gardeners program and finding what are the best varieties for New York State zones, so that you had a resource that's fun, it's interesting, and it covers the history and culture of different foods that are also in this list, which is really nice for folks who are beginning gardeners. So that's been an amazing resource, and that's something we're sharing in these hands-on activity kits for Seed to Supper.
So that hard copy will be available?
Yes.
Well, you know we want one right now.
Well, I'm going to give you some.
Okay.
So, and I also giving them out in these hands-on activity kits that are going out to every educator that does Seed to Supper this year. In addition to that, what's great about this program, the last 3 years, we've done a theme on different cultural varieties that are where there's a lot of people from certain regions of the world in New York State. So we really looked at the demographics of New York State, and we said, okay, the 1 year we're going to do Seeds of the Americas, mostly Central and South America and the Caribbean, which was a big, we might need to do that again. There's a lot of seeds in that category. We also just did Eastern Asia. That was last year. And now we're going into Eastern European varieties. So we're going to do that this year. And so we're hoping to continue this theme to, again, welcome especially new immigrants to New York State, make them feel welcome at CCE sites where they can see things from their home country that they can grow in New York, which I think is really exciting. Plus, it is an educational tool for me every year as I'm like, wow, okay, this is a new vegetable I've never tried and we can do it here. And it's a great way to explore new varieties. And that's been an exciting way to run a program and connect it with Seed to Supper as well, since that program reaches people from all different parts of the world as well.
Okay, and there's an online presence too for just the current vegetables of this season.
Yes, so there's a list that every year that comes out with like updated varieties that you all have rated in the local vegetable varieties for gardeners beds, plus, of course, the seed catalog, which we're going to try to update regularly. But that easier one that's like a 1 or 3 page document is a little easier to take to the store.
And
yeah.
And they're very thorough.
They are.
Each description is really in depth so that you understand what you're looking at. Instead of saying, oh, this looks like a pretty carrot, you understand why.
Exactly. I think that's
well done.
It's such a great, he's actually, the student who did this was a master gardener. He became a master gardener when he was like 18, 19.
But of course.
Of course. So, you know, he's one of us. So that's cool. So that was a great project. And I think this project will continue to grow in that same way with building on the list every year. So
we'll include the link to that reference. Does it give advice for like the easiest varieties to grow?
That's a great question.
Starter set?
Yeah, for me.
So what's nice about it is that there is a rating system, right? So this is how the Master Gardeners rated on taste, yield, and ease. So ease is probably the way that you would look. Again, only the varieties that made it into this book were, you know, the more 4 to 5 stars varieties. So most of them should be fairly easy to grow. But there are some descriptions, like if you want to grow with kids, like what's a good variety of tomato to grow with kids, or if you have small space gardening. We did that as a theme a few years ago. There's some of that information in here that's helpful for the early gardener to figure out what would be a good variety for me.
And is there a variety of tomato that doesn't get some kind of disease? Is that descendant exist?
That is a great question.
It's $64,000.
Cherry. We have some professors here who do that. The cherry varieties.
Some, right?
There's some folks doing some really interesting work here who just got hired. Jonathan Vogel, I believe, who's looking at climate change and varieties that are going to be better for some of the different changes in New York State. So stay tuned. We don't have that level of detail in here. But if you are interested in disease resistance and things like that, on our vegetable varieties for gardeners site, there is some of that information. You can get that detail.
Great.
Yeah, that's a covers thing.
What? Tell me some of your favorites, because you must be a vegetable gardener, right?
Yes.
So tell me, like, if you were going to plant like 3 or 4 different vegetables.
Yeah.
Which are your favorites? I know nobody wants to choose favorites, but I'm going to make you do that.
Oh, that's fine. I was just saying, you know, we have a small garden and we have limited sunlight, but we have like one sunny patch. So I do tend to go towards the cherry tomatoes and sun gold. I was looking at that. Last year, you know, I did dragon tongue beans and they were just, you know, they're beautiful. They have beautiful flowers. So I like the ornamental varieties that are both like beautiful to look at and to grow. So those are a few examples. I also really like shishito peppers. So I grew those this year and
they're very in.
And they're very tasty and they're actually easier to grow than I would have thought. So that was, I mean, I was surprised that it fit in the small scale of my garden. I could do it. For a busy mom of a 5-year-old, those are the ones that I can do.
And the colors, that must have been gorgeous.
Colors is all, it definitely right now when it comes to my kiddo, you know, anything that's easy to grow, easy to get them to eat, cucumbers, snap peas, those kinds of things, that's what I'm growing. But I intend someday, I aspire to have more space and more room to grow and, you know, do more with. But those are some of the ones that I've really enjoyed.
And you, I know you're going to talk a little bit about one of your other specialties, which is kind of growing with climate change, but is it's affecting vegetable varieties too, right? So is there some information about, you know, we have these like heavy rains that last for, you know, 20 minutes and then we have no rain. Are there vegetable varieties that are kind of more climate, you know, resilient, or is that something that's in the future?
I think that's something I'm going to have to get back to y'all on. We did do a theme around that and I'd have to go back and look and find those varieties. I know that when it comes to, again, growing things from different parts of the world and trying them out, I know that thinking about those varieties that are going to be able to handle both, again, drought and really wet conditions is really challenging. And I mean, you've seen it in your own gardens, how challenging that is with different diseases and things. So I think that that's something we need to do more work on. Actually, this year at Ag and Service, we do a conference every year here on campus for our Master Gardener coordinators. And Master Gardeners, if they're within the region, are welcome to join. We're going to have a session, a lightning session, on climate change and gardening, and Steve Reiners will be joining us. He's a great resource for really intensive information on those kinds of topics. So he might, I think he'll be covering that.
I think we need to talk to him, right?
I think you need to talk.
Yeah. and you're our way in, right? So I'm segueing a little into the climate change. Talk to us about kind of your program or your work on climate change and gardening and educating folks out there, because people are starting to see the effects, right? I mean, certain plants are doing well and not doing well, and there's a lot of invasive species that are coming because of climate change. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have a resource that was created before my time here called Gardening in a Warming World, which is a curriculum for teaching the public, Master Gardeners can use for teaching the public about climate change and the impacts on local environments. I've worked a lot in climate change education work, more working with the public and helping them understand. And that's kind of the perspective I'm taking with a lot of our work. I feel like our Master Gardeners are like the bleeding edge of wanting to do more. And so we also have, like I mentioned, this new guide that will be a month-by-month guide to ecological gardening in New York State that will help folks to kind of prepare and think about how do I change my practices on a month-by-month basis. And that guide, which includes, like I said, month-by-month checklists as well as appendices, has been reviewed by Master Gardeners around the state for kind of like how does this fit with your gardening, as well as experts here at Cornell. So that's going to be a really important resource for the future because it's updated to our region and to the specifics of how that changes your behavior in the garden. Another way we're addressing climate change is with, education on ecological gardening skills for master gardeners. And so we have an online advanced course for master gardeners that covers things like how to use cover crops, weeds and weed suppression, especially thinking about those weeds that are going to be bigger issues, seed saving, pollinator protection, and even things like engaging lower literacy audiences on these issues. Climate and water-wise plant selection is in there, as well as biocontrol. And then at the very end, the food forest garden design. And so why food forests, right? Again, with ecological gardening, food forests and the idea of planting more woody perennial food crops is a sustainability strategy. And so we've been trialing food forests around the state with some grant funding and seeing how those varieties are working, how native species of different woody plants, how do they do in the face of climate change? So that's some of the things you can find on our advanced course. And like I said, we'll have that hands-on resource for gardeners to take into their garden in the future. So that's three resources that you all can use to start, again, building your amazing skills around advanced kind of climate readiness in the garden.
Define food forest for us. Are you talking about like nut trees, or is that where we're going? It's like kind of a native hazelnuts and things like that.
Do you have to have a forest first?
No, you don't, which is what's so cool about it. So these food forest trial gardens went in five locations in New York State. So they'll be like demonstration gardens that you can visit with the public or with master gardeners. And the idea behind them was to share the information on what are the different layers of a food forest, what are the varieties, again, that work well in New York State and also in conditions that are less than ideal. So many of these gardens, it's interesting, some of them are in really sunny, beautiful, amazing locations. Some are in shady. So you can see how different varieties do better in different conditions across New York State. And also, I think the big thing around the food forest is also the way they were designed. They were really a strong focus on community engagement and designing not just for food, but for like a beautiful public space. Again, kind of edible landscaping. So that's what a food forest is to me. It's a public space that also meets some of these educational goals around ecological gardening, gardening like a forest, teaching people how to garden with nature.
And are the sites open now? Are they available?
So three of them are. Two, one in Erie County and Monroe, which is where Rochester is, and Erie is where Buffalo is, have taken a little longer. They're in cities, and so there's some barriers there. But they're making progress. But the others are in Steuben County. So we picked some rural and urban. Steuben in the southern tier, as well as Tioga County. That one's been implemented. And then we also have one in Livingston County. But we would love to get more funding for this kind of project in the future, expand it. And I hear you all have an amazing model forest.
That sounds like a great place to make a food forest.
Well, they're already doing a lot of crops in there.
That's what I was thinking.
They are indeed. They have
ginseng,
mushrooms. Not leeks, but there's a couple of other crops that they are definitely, and they've got deer exclosures.
Oh, nice.
So I think we should be next to get a food forest.
Yeah,
lobbying happens.
Make a note.
Well, you've got a guide now for how to do it. We learned the ropes of how to do it. So come check out our resource setting.
Wait a minute. After Master Gardeners, now we're Master Gardeners, and that's an advanced Master Gardener training. So does that make us PhD gardeners?
I think so.
I mean,
you can never stop. And there's just so much. I think that's what I've learned. You are an eternal student in this work. It's just amazing. And there's just so much. It's kind of a bottomless. It's an amazing resource. And we're going to keep adding to it every year. So adding new modules on different topics.
Ashley, what else have we not covered that you want to talk about?
So going to our website, gardening.cales.cornell.edu, you can find out a lot of information about where some of these different projects are happening around the state, because there's ways you might find some interest and maybe new volunteers who might want to get involved, especially with things like Seed to Supper and Food Forest Trial Garden work. These are some of these areas where I think a lot of new gardeners are interested in, and we're excited to share that statewide, plus just all of the troubleshooting website links that we have are also really great for the public. So please check out our website. I think the other thing is that, really keep tabs with your local Master Gardener program. We're really hoping, again, to keep building interest in the Master Gardener program statewide. And we have a new curriculum for training Master Gardeners that includes lots of this updated information on climate change and food security and things like that. So if you are interested or on the fence about becoming a master gardener, definitely think about applying.
Yeah, we definitely need new master gardeners. And I think a lot of folks think it's a garden club, and it's certainly, you know, garden clubs are wonderful, but it's not a garden club, right? And it's some of the things you're talking about in terms of ecological gardening and food insecurity are really important to people and may not realize that that's a big part of the program.
And training. Now, I hear at least once a week, I hang around with a lot of people who do perennial gardens and landscaping for a living. They all want to become master gardeners. And they say, when's the training? And I have yet to see a consistent training schedule statewide. Is that at least in the works?
In our state, we do run differently than every other state, basically, in the country. The master gardener program is run at the local level, and I try my hardest. I put out a couple of lists, right, in the past of when are the latest and greatest trainings. But because they're so locally focused, we have one statewide online, it's called Moodle. It's our online interface for the curriculum. And we train the master gardener coordinators who then run that. But it's a great idea to better host maybe statewide when those upcoming trainings are. And that resource was our first time with a statewide curriculum that was like updated. And that just came out in 2019. So that's what most coordinators get trained on and who I work with. And then the local county, because they're each individual nonprofits, run their training from the local level. This is just good information for folks to know. And so, yeah, I would love to keep on that and have an ongoing training list statewide.
Yeah.
That would be easier for folks to access.
Even a hybrid setup. Because now Moodle, people could train, master gardener training on the Moodle system and then have on hands-on as well.
And that is the vision. So during COVID, we had this new curriculum and then everything shut down. I got hired and everything shut down. We put it, what was meant to be a fully in-person training, into the Moodle platform so that hybrid, or at that time, fully online could happen. Now that we're out of most of the COVID restrictions, you know, we are encouraging master gardener coordinators to adopt a hybrid way of doing things. So let's have a Saturday a month where we get together and do the hands-on activities and then read materials in the interim, maybe do a Zoom meeting once. And it helps to also make our program welcoming to folks with young kids. People who are working, it might help to bring in a few people who wouldn't normally be able to do it. So that's been a really interesting transition. We would never want to replace in person, but it's nice to have the option to do both. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can't replace in person.
No.
If you're a gardener, what's
the point? Exactly. So I think what's nice about it, though, is, you know, sometimes a lot of our videos now are online, so you can watch a video and then come in person and do the really fun part, which is the hands-on. So, yeah.
It's so challenging, everybody making the transition, I think, and especially for something that's so in-person. It's just kind of, we're feeling our way, right, to kind of figure out what makes sense. And totally to your point about attracting more people with some time restrictions, because we love our retired master gardeners, but we also want some folks, and there's some real interest among people who are still in the working population.
Oh, absolutely. They want evening and weekend trainings.
Yeah.
And
it's both, and
they have energy.
Yeah.
Well, what about
we do
both?
Too, Jane. We do too.
I'm tired, right? I know that, and this is coming from my background in K-12, like intergenerational work is the most beneficial. And I think if mentoring master gardeners of all ages, mentoring each other is really important. That's why I'm also passionate about getting kids.
That's why I want to see the master gardeners and the 4-H in an alliance.
Yes.
Totally.
And Jean has found working with me, a younger person, it's much more effective. Yeah.
So working with children keeps you young.
So we have to ask you a question that we ask everyone. It's a prerequisite now, right? We want to ask you, in your work on every day, and you do a lot of different things and you see a lot of different people, what gives you hope in the world with lots of bad things happening in the world? What gives you some hope?
Yeah, you know, I just got out of like hearing some of the success stories of Seed to Supper. And when I hear about a veteran who's never gardened before in their entire life, and they made it to 80 something, and they're like, oh my gosh, I now can, and I can do all this, and I get to taste these vegetables, and they're amazing. I mean, and then it's helping with stress. And I find that very inspiring. I mean, I think also when I see like the fact that kids will try a vegetable for the first time, from a garden, but they would never have eaten that thing if it was in the school lunch. That's very inspiring.
They grew it, yeah.
And I've seen it firsthand, like how, again, people who've never had access to, if you've never had someone who mentored you to love nature, and then you have like a supportive mentor in the form of a master gardener volunteer get you there, it can be just such an amazing experience for people to connect in that way. Because I think it's a birthright. Like, we should all be connected to nature. We should all have that access. And so that's what inspires me when I see what's going on in the world. I know I can go into my garden. I know I can meet up with, you know, a volunteer and be inspired again about, like, you know, humanity is good. And we have this natural inclination to take care of nature and take care of each other. And that's what gardening does, you know? And I think that's really special. Like, the community piece you can't take away. And I wouldn't take away the love of nature either. It's like, it comes together in this program in a really, really special way. So that's what gives me hope.
That is a great way to end. I really like that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much. We learned a lot as master gardeners, and hopefully everybody else did too.
Well, thank you for interviewing me, and yeah, come check out any of our events and things we have listed on the website.
Oh, we're going to tap all the time and talk to you.
Good to meet you. All right.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Powers and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.